This is Attack of the 20th Century. Thank you for joining us as we explore science fiction, fantasy, and horror films of the 20th century. I am your host, Jeff.
And I'm your other host, Kim.
Welcome to episode 21, where we get to do our Attackies Award show for this season.
Welcome.
Yes. Look for us on Instagram and Facebook at Attack of the 20th Century. That's 20th. We post our next movie selections there. You can comment, give your thoughts, and they just might make it on the air. You also have to check now to see when season 2 will begin.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now it's a bit undecided. I think we're definitely going to take a few months off.
Okay.
But this is the Attackies, the award ceremony for the season.
The culmination of our inaugural season.
That's right. 20 movies we watched.
I felt like I should have gotten extra Scrabble points just now. Throwing in those.
That's a pretty good word. That's a $4 word right there.
Said culmination and inaugural in the same sentence.
But yes, 20 movies, science fiction, horror, fantasy. So all of our awards tonight will be going through basically these movies, and the awards will come from the participants of these movies, whether they be the actors, right, the music, or whatever. So
just like, I was going to say the Grammys, but that's music, right? The Oscars.
The ESPYs. Well, the ESPYs
Wait,
is
that's sports,
football,
right?
Or something, right?
I don't even know. Okay, yeah.
Anyway.
It's its own thing, the Attackies.
So what have we been up to? We've taken a few weeks off just to kind of prepare for this. Ooh. We've had a lot going on.
Had a lot going on. But I feel like we always say that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm realizing that I keep telling people, like, don't worry, our son's camp is over with on such and such a date, and I'll be more free. Or don't worry, our daughter finishes dance camp on da-da-da-da. And nothing has actually slowed down. So no. I think having two teenagers in the house is just a very busy time.
It is, and you realize, like, half the summer's gone already.
Oh my gosh, don't say that.
Now, Mike, who was in the Invasion of the Body Snatchers episode and the Crow episode,
right?
The two of us and our buddy Nate all went to Vegas, first of all.
Yes, you've been gone to Vegas.
We went to Vegas, then we went to Zion National Park.
In Utah,
and that was amazing. For 6 hours, we went through the Narrows, which is really amazing experience.
If you don't know what the Narrows are, Google that.
Google that. It's really cool. You're basically going up a riverbed with a huge mountain to your left and a huge mountain to your right, just straight up. 2 days after we got back, they had flash floods in that same location. So it's kind of scary. I mean, what if we'd been 3 hours up this thing and then it started flooding?
Oh my gosh.
You're just kind of toast. I mean, people have died on this thing.
Yeah, yeah. I'm very thankful that that didn't happen.
Yes, you're not a widow, so that's good.
That's excellent.
And this podcast can continue.
We can continue our podcast. So it's been literally 20 years now since you hiked Petra in Jordan in the Middle East. Did you see any similarities? Because when I think of... I've only seen pictures of the Narrows in Zion National Park, but it looks very... Minus the water.
Yeah, there's water in Utah, and there's not water in
Jordan. Yeah, there's no water in the desert in Jordan. But you do hike through that very narrow pass, the Seek, they call it, in Petra, going into Petra.
Well, I think driving through... Going from Vegas to Zion, it looks very Jordanese, like... Jordanesque. I don't know what the right word is, but essentially you have all this flat land, and then out of nowhere you have this humongous rock mountain.
Yeah.
So you don't really have that in Florida.
No, you don't. And I've only seen Salt Lake City in Utah. I haven't seen other parts of you. I would love to see more.
You haven't been to Arizona and all that yet.
No.
Well, we went to Phoenix together, though.
Well,
remember?
I was 8 months pregnant, and I saw it was 120 degrees.
Wow.
So I saw a lot of air conditioning when we went to Phoenix. So that was a while ago. I think I had a toddler and 8 months pregnant
with
our daughter.
You know what's
funny? So,
we went to Phoenix in June that year.
Was it June? Okay, so I wasn't 8 months pregnant, but I was still pregnant.
You were pregnant. And then, we just went in June.
Yeah.
In Vegas. And Vegas was 110 at night. During the day. And it was like you're in an oven. And everyone, of course, we're in Florida. There's all this humidity. So you have this mindset. Oh, but if you go to Vegas, it's dry heat.
It's a dry heat. Yeah. I know. That's what everybody told us before we went to Arizona.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, 120 degrees is 120 degrees. Yeah. Wet or dry.
Exactly.
That's hot.
It's pretty darn hot. And But yeah, I mean, Vegas was amazing. We saw the Jabberwockies there, if anybody's familiar with that dance troupe. You know, they basically, they wear masks the whole time, which I think is really kind of cool.
Yeah.
It has kind of a sci-fi kind of element to it.
Right.
You know, they do time travel in their Vegas show.
Oh, okay.
And they go through like Motown and they'll go through like the big band era.
Okay. Like dancing through the ages.
Dancing through the ages.
Gotcha.
But they like literally do time travel. Like that's part of their show.
Wait, they literally do time?
They literally. Well, that's part of their show, you know.
Gotcha, gotcha, gotcha.
So what have we been watching recently?
Oh, gosh. Well, it's been a while. We've started, finally got on the Loki train, started mm-hmm. watching the Loki series. So we're, what, 4 episodes in?
I think tomorrow. At the time of this recording. Yeah, yeah. Tomorrow is the 5th episode. Okay. I think it's 6 episodes total.
Right. And so we're actually tracking with Loki, which,
yeah.
you know, we're usually behind. Mm-hmm. Like, we still haven't watched the whole Winter Soldier or whatever it's called.
No.
Series, but we're tracking with Loki. We've stayed caught up with Loki, so I'm mm-hmm. I'm a little bit proud of that, which is probably dumb, but hey.
Well, we were Loki fans.
Yes, I'm a huge Tom Hiddleston fan.
And too. WandaVision, we tracked it. We kept up with it because it was different.
Yeah, it was so unique. We were intrigued, you know.
This is Attack of the 20th Century, and so many of those episodes were based on 1900s shows,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. So we were definitely interested in that. Yeah, Loki's been cool so far.
No, I've enjoyed Loki. I have.
And I have to say, Owen Wilson in that show has been amazing.
Okay, so I listened to a review on a different podcast recently of, you know, the three. I don't even think they had watched the 4th episode yet, maybe when this podcast was out. But and they really hit on something that resonated with me, and that was, it's really the dynamic between Owen Wilson and Tom Hiddleston that makes that show.
Yeah.
Like the one episode, was it episode 2, where we almost don't see Owen Wilson at all?
Yeah.
It's a little flatter.
Yeah, it is.
Than the other episodes. Right. You need Owen. I don't know what it is about the dynamic between Owen Wilson and Tom
Hiddleston,
but
I
like it.
To be an adult male, you know, and we're talking like in your 40s mm-hmm. type, 30s, 40s, 50s, that mm-hmm. era, to make these kind of connections with other people.
Yeah.
You know, and you see this friendship that's kind of budding between the two guys, but there's also this distrust.
Right.
Because, you know, you might stab me in the back.
It's Loki.
It's Loki.
Owen Wilson literally says, I've literally seen you stab someone in the back like 50 times. He's like, but I'm not going to do it anymore. That's old.
Yeah. But I love the interaction between those guys. I think there's something for me as a male that kind of pulls me in. It's like, yeah, you know, you kind of want that budding friendship that happens yeah. between the two guys.
I see that. And we kind of have an affinity for Owen Wilson anyhow. Like,
yeah.
he's in a lot of Wes Anderson things that we've yeah. recently realized that we love.
Yeah,
but we liked Owen Wilson yeah. even before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've quoted Life Aquatic a lot during Loki, because that's one of our yeah. favorite films, like, all of our kids have seen, you know?
Yes, yes.
We also saw the movie Shazam.
Oh, that's right. We did. We're way behind on that.
We're way behind.
Like, way behind.
Right,
I enjoyed it. In fact, I saw, I think you posted on our Instagram page something about it was kind of a fun throwaway movie. And I thought, I don't know. There was something about it that wasn't throwaway. And I think it was mm-hmm. the whole, you know, foster family element, and mm-hmm. he's figuring out where his real family is, that
yeah.
whole sort of thing. Like, there was some... depth. I don't know if they did it justice, but there was definitely an attempt at depth there.
Yeah.
And I really, like, I loved that. So I don't know. I really enjoyed it. Of course, there's kids cursing and we let our kids watch it and, you know, whatever. It is
yeah.
what it is. That's just kind of the world we live in.
Yeah.
But
that foster couple, it's like, I wish I knew more people like that.
Yeah, right?
They seem really cool. You and I actually took classes for how many weeks to be foster parents?
Oh, I don't know. It was a long time. Yeah.
But it takes a special type to be a foster parent.
Yeah, we kind of realized, well, I ended up being pregnant in the midst of that and was very sick. But we kind of realized, like, maybe we weren't really cut out for that. And we have good friends that have fostered and adopted. And it can be a very tough life.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so I love that they kind of touched on that. And that was
yeah.
like a bit of a real picture. Like, this is not all, you know, rainbows and butterflies all the time. This is
yeah.
real life. And kudos to the people who are willing to take this on.
Yeah.
You know?
And when they see this kid that runs away or just disappears.
Right.
Of course, he's got like some crazy circumstances going on.
Because he's a superhero. Right, right.
But, you see this guy that's encouraging his wife. Like, you've been there. I've been there. Because in the movie. Because
they were
the movie,
foster kids fostered, themselves. And right. then have come out of the system and are now raising foster kids. Yeah, yeah. So yeah. This is probably really old news for people
Everybody
listening.
Else is like, hey, everybody this else is like in the world is 2 years Shazam. Ago, buddy. Like, what are you talking about?
Was but, it only 2 years ago? It feels a lot longer. How long ago did Shazam come out?
I think a couple years ago, right? 2018, 2019.
I have no idea.
Anyway. But we finally got around to seeing it. Our youngest has been saying, you got to see it. Because they actually saw it in the theater.
Yes, with the grandparents. They went to see it. And he's been begging us to watch it with them.
And we have HBO Max. So right. we finally sat down and watched it. And we really liked it.
I liked it. I liked it a lot. I'm shocked that there's a... Not really. I'm not really shocked. But sad that there's a bunch of naysayers out there. Because I actually thoroughly enjoyed it. And I felt like there was... some real life depth there that you don't always get in a superhero movie.
Yeah,
so,
I agree.
It's nice.
So for today, these are the Attackies. This is our awards ceremony, and we've never done one before, so we're kind of
like
winging it as we
the
go.
The Olympics music should have started playing just now or something. Like, we should have some sort of promo, I don't know, some sort of music.
Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about these categories. So just to reiterate that the movies that are in contention for our award are basically one of the 20 movies that we reviewed.
This season. Yep.
So some of these categories we have are inspired by things like the Oscars.
What do we have? 12 categories?
So yeah, I think we have about 12 categories, and some of these are fun. You know, some of them are traditional, and some of them are just fun Jeff and Kim type questions.
Yeah.
Things that we ask each other, over dinner, on date night or something. We'll just ask each other's kooky questions. So the first category of the Attackies for season one is most rewatchable film.
Dun, dun, dun.
So, Kim, I'll let you take these away.
All right. So, basically, we've watched 20 movies over the season, right? And so, we're not going to review all 20 movies for every category. So, we kind of already have done this narrowing process of kind of our top five contenders. So, the top five contenders for most rewatchable film are Jason and the Argonauts, Young Frankenstein, Big Trouble in Little China, Vertigo, and Horror of Dracula.
Mm-hmm. And a big part of this category is like fun factor.
Right.
Like movies that we as a family would want to watch over and over again.
Yeah, I always say if it's a rainy Saturday, we've got nothing else going on, which it's about to be a rainy, what is today? Tuesday night, yeah. Wednesday morning. We are facing a tropical storm at the moment.
Elsa.
Yeah, tropical storm Elsa is kind of breathing down our necks
Let
here in
rain.
Florida.
Let it rain.
Okay. Anyhow, so maybe tomorrow we might rewatch one of these. Yeah. We'll see. Depends on how big of a mess the yard is and how much cleanup we have to do. So, yeah, rewatchable really means just like, what's fun? What has the fun factor for us? Like,
right.
if it's a rainy Saturday, what are we going to sit down and be like, let's watch whatever again for the 20th time? For us, any of these five, Jason and the Argonauts, Young Frankenstein, Big Trouble in Little China, Vertigo, Horror of Dracula, I would watch any of those again and again just for kicks.
And we
have. And we have. We literally have done that in this house. Yeah. So I kind of narrowed it down really. For me, the top two contenders out of those five would be Jason and the Argonauts and Big Trouble in Little China. Mm-hmm. Young Frankenstein is hilarious and fun, but it's, okay, this is my mom mouth speaking here.
Yeah.
We do still have kids in the house. It's a little bit on the body side, and I don't know.
Mel Brooks.
Yeah,
Mel Brooks humor.
Yeah, it's Mel Brooks humor. So if it's the whole family in the house, like, will we watch it together? Sure. But is it my first choice? You know, maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, Vertigo is a masterpiece. Like, that movie is stunning.
I've probably seen it 10 times in my lifetime.
Right. But it's a little bit of a downer, you know? Like, it's
definitely the ending, you have the spoiler alert, but there is kind of a downer ending.
Yeah. You're not going to walk away from it like, oh, that was a fun Saturday afternoon watch, And kind of the same of Horror of Dracula, it's a little darker, a little dreary, yeah. You know. So the reason I narrow it down to Jason and the Argonauts and Big Trouble in Little China is because they're fun. They're yeah. just fun watches. Of course, Jason and the Argonauts is that whole sword and sandals flick, mm-hmm. you know. Just
Ray
that,
Harryhausen effect.
Yeah, you've got those fun Ray Harryhausen monsters in there that are just cool to watch.
Yeah.
Just so different, you know. And then... Yeah. You know, Big Trouble in Little China. Come on, Kurt Russell, right. Kim Cattrall, like the whole underground, you know.
Magic.
Yeah, magic, Little Martial China arts. Scene in San Francisco in the
yeah,
80s.
Yeah.
Just the one-liners alone out of Big Trouble in Little China right there make it so, so fun to rewatch right. and rewatch. Like, you just end up loving Kurt Russell's character in that
right.
movie. So, I think for me, the winner in this category is
probably... And for me.
And for you. It's Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah. Yeah, we grew up watching this movie, and I don't know how many times I've seen this movie. I mentioned 10 times for the
Vertigo.
Vertigo. I've probably seen this 30 times. I mean,
yeah, probably.
Me and my whole family love this movie. We quote this. And when I say my family, like my brother, my sister, my mom,
right.
my dad.
And it's the same at my house. Like, yeah. I watched this with my dad growing up and my yeah. parents. Yeah.
And now our kids quote this movie.
Yeah, a
so
lot.
It just shows, like, this movie is a multi-generational movie.
For sure. For
so
sure.
yeah, for sure.
Hey, did I mess that up? Should I have said, and the award goes to...
Yeah. No drum roll effects. I think that's good.
All right. So we're going to talk through the attackies.
So the next category is kind of a fun category. And this sounds like a Jeff question, even Kim told me.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
for
like,
sure.
Of all these 20 movies, which is the most appealing movie universe?
Explain what that means.
So let's say, and I always use a genie, right? A genie shows up and says, I am now going to transport you out of your current life into one of these 20 movies. One of the universes they've created.
Right.
So which of these 20 movies do you want to be sent into? Not to be like a main character or anything, but like you as Kim or Jeff or whoever.
Right.
You're going to live in the universe that's been created in this movie.
That setting becomes your setting.
Correct. So this category, again, most appealing movie universe. So this is the universe in which if a genie shows up and says, you will now go into this universe... This
it's
is the answer you're going to get.
It's always a genie with you.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. That just works, right? Magic?
Sure, sure.
It works for a podcast. Nominee number one, Star Trek, the motion picture. Basically space.
Yeah.
Which is several years into the future. You have San Francisco, which is featured in two of our movies, Vertigo and Big Trouble in Little China.
Mm. Different time periods, though. We've got like 60s
and
the
80s. Mm-hmm. Greece... which is from Jason and the Argonauts.
Mm-hmm. Kind of antiquated, you know,
yeah.
Greece.
Yeah, classic Greece period, right?
Mm-hmm.
Greentown, Illinois, which is a fictional town that Ray Bradbury used several times over, but and specifically for us, it was mm-hmm. in Something Wicked This Way Comes. And then Scotland from The Highlander. So we could have gone two ways with The Highlander. We could have gone 1980s New York.
Oh, yeah, because he time travels.
Which is blah.
Yeah, right. I didn't love that.
Or his origin story, which is most of the movie, I would say. Like 60% of the movie.
Because of the beginning and then the flashbacks.
Yeah. Was Scotland. So when I think through this, of course, Star Trek is appealing in the sense of the, advances in medical science.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Bones, like, does this tricorder over your stomach, and he could tell if it's your liver's doing something weird or your pancreas or whatever. So that's pretty cool. But, you know, you think of Star Trek, most of the places they visit, there's something beautiful about it, but there's usually something terrible and awful about it.
Yeah, that's the whole point, right?
Right.
They're showing up to fix a problem.
And in the motion picture, the one planet they visit is basically V'ger, which is just kind of a terrible place to live, unless you want to join with the computer system.
Oh, right.
And then San Francisco, you have 1960s San Francisco, 1980s San Francisco. You know, it's just San Francisco. I've been to San Francisco.
Right.
It's a cool place, by the way. I like San Francisco. I went to Alcatraz. I did the Golden Gate Bridge.
Yeah, all the touristy things.
Touristy things. If I'd stayed longer or had friends there, maybe I would get to see, like, underground San Francisco.
Yeah, the underground Little China.
Mm-hmm. Jason and the Argonauts, you had classic Greece kind of in there,
the heyday, really.
The heyday, yeah.
Yeah.
And basically, we've talked about this before, like what superpower would you like? You know, one of mine is time travel. Yeah. I would definitely like to see Athens, Greece at its heyday.
Oh, yeah.
Greentown, Illinois. I have to say there's something that really draws me to that because it's that Midwest classic, you know, like everybody knows everybody.
Right. Small town USA.
Small town USA. Yep. And then the Highlander, we mentioned Scotland. It's gorgeous. I love it. Like, just when you think of, like, visuals, it's amazing. But
Scotland itself has always been on the top of, like, my travel destinations.
Yeah.
Like, I for sure want to go see Scotland one day. Yeah.
But I think of Highlander, is there going to be some clan that comes in and rapes my woman and, like, burns my house?
It's a tough time to live in Scotland. It's basically like the Viking period, but the Scotland version, right?
Yeah, yeah. But of these categories, I, for me personally, and talking it over with Kim, she's in agreement with this. It comes mm-hmm. down to ancient Greece, Jason and the Argonauts, or Greentown, Illinois, something wicked this way comes. And I'm a simple guy. I just find the appeal, the Ray Bradbury universe that he's used in several of his books. Mm-hmm. Greentown, Illinois is the universe. If the genie shows up and points to me and says, Jeff, what is the most appealing movie universe that I'm going to zap you into from these 20, I'm going to say Greentown, Illinois.
Very nice. Well, it is not just as a small town USA, but they have seasons there. We saw, you know, we read the book and watched the movie. Mm-hmm. Like, you get actual fall seasons with, like, crisp air and the changing of the leaves, which we don't get here. So that would be a nice change. That would just be fun to experience. And the bad guy in that movie gets vanquished, right? Like, they triumph in the end. So that's kind of nice.
That is cool.
Yeah. That doesn't always happen in all of the
different settings. As long as you don't get, like, pulled into Mr. Dark's, you know,
schemes. Yeah, don't ride the carousel. You'll be okay.
Yeah. Avoid the carnival.
Yeah, avoid the carnival, you're going to love Greentown, Illinois. It's going to be awesome.
So our next category is best costuming.
Yes, and I feel particularly geared up to talk about this because something we didn't mention on What Have We Just Recently Watched, our daughter, I think we've talked about this before, is on a huge musical theater kick, and she just watched The King and I for the first time this afternoon. So I wasn't able to be in there to watch the whole thing with her. But I was in and out, and man, the costuming is just outrageous. Nice. So I feel really geared up to talk about some amazing costuming. So the five contenders for best costuming are Red Sonja, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, Vertigo, sorry, I can't read anymore, my 42-year-old, Big Trouble in Little China, and Jason and the Argonauts.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk through each of those.
All right, so let's start with Jason and the Argonauts, because you've already talked about, like, it's mm-hmm. classic ancient Greece, you know, we're talking, like, the times of, I don't know, Aristotle and these guys, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of swords and sandals and, I don't know, like, not togas necessarily. Well, there were some togas. There were some togas. So it just looks very, like, when you think of ancient Greece, it's very classical.
Yeah. And then, you have, of course, the gods and their outfits. And then you have soldiers that are kind of wearing their soldier outfits. And then the sailors.
So it felt, obviously, we weren't alive during ancient Greek times, but it felt very authentic. Just the way it kind of puts you in that space. Mm-hmm. So I enjoyed that. Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And you might think, well, that's like a, 1956 or something movie. What's so special about that? The reason that movie stood out to me is because the main character, Dana Winter, plays, I think her name was Becky mm-hmm. in the movie, like the main guy's love interest. She dressed like she was straight off of a Paris runway. Like every dress or outfit she wore, I was like, well, that is, even in black and white, like you could just tell, like she had this very almost Audrey Hepburn kind of flair.
Yeah, I thought the same thing.
Yeah. So I was like, man, like who is she? Like she's just, everybody else.
Always well put together, looked like a million bucks.
Yeah, very well put together. Everybody else in there was kind of like typical 1950s small town America, you know, like.
But nice outfits. Nice outfits. Clothes.
Yeah, yeah. But she was a stunner. Who else do we have? Oh, Vertigo. My gosh. So again, this goes back to the genius of Alfred Hitchcock, really. You think, okay, 1960s, everybody's wearing like typical 1960s clothing. But if you really pay attention, and we talked about this in our episode on Vertigo, like Alfred Hitchcock cared about like colors of clothing and who's wearing what and how that plays with the story. And so that really... It's maybe not costuming per se, but it really affects the storytelling. And I love that, you know, how their colors, they each character kind of has their set color palette, and mm-hmm. then they kind of intermingle as they become yeah. closer to one another. And then there's the whole, like, Alfred Hitchcock has a woman type that yeah. he likes to use in his movie, right?
Oh, yeah.
So Kim Novak's character is very buttoned down and, mm-hmm. and kind of uptight and very, very striking and well put together, but almost uncomfortable.
Yeah. There's something evil and sinister behind all that.
Yeah. It's like there's a facade there and you can't quite figure out what's going on behind mm-hmm. it. So mm-hmm. I mean, kudos. I think it's just brilliant. Is it like fantastic costuming? Maybe not, but there's mm-hmm. definitely some rich storytelling yeah. happening there.
It's perfect for Vertigo, that's for sure.
Yeah, it is perfect for Vertigo. And that really brings me down to Red Sonja and Big Trouble in Little China. Mm-hmm. So Big Trouble in Little China is 1980s San Francisco, but we're kind of in the underground Little China, and there's a lot of like ancient ancestral Chinese lore happening here. Yeah. So they've got these fantastic costumes. Now, when you see Kurt Russell and Kim Cattrall outside of that,
yeah,
they're in their 1980s, you right. know, wife beater type. Not even a wife beater, but like sun's out, guns out kind of tank top is what Kurt Russell's wearing, right? Actually, I think you have a replica.
I do. I've cosplayed as Jack Burton before.
You know, there's shoulder pads. It's very 1980s,
yeah.
you know. But when you're underground in, you know, Lopan's lair, like the costume gown, is
Lopan wears, and yeah. the girls with green eyes,
yeah, the makeup, yeah. the fingernails, even just the stunning. Headdresses, everything is so stunning, and the colors are so saturated. I think yeah. that really makes it pop. So that's amazing. Which brings us to Red Sonja.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like it's kind of it is a B movie. There's mm-hmm. definitely some budgeting issues with this movie.
Right.
But there's so many different like lands and people groups that they kind of hit in
yeah.
mythical ones, you know, ones they've made up in Red Sonja, and they each are very distinct from one another because yeah. of their costuming.
Yeah.
Like you can tell, like these are mountainous people and these are more of an Asian background kind of people. And
right.
they, every single one of them you go to, it's very clear like, oh, we've entered mm-hmm. a new land now because the costuming is so ornate, but yet so different from where we came yeah. from.
And I think that's very antithetical to what we have in today's society. Today's society, it's like, oh, we should all be one.
Kind of all look the same.
Yeah, everybody's the same. And if you point out differences, that's almost like a faux yeah. pas. You know, don't do that.
We all follow the same influencers. So order the same stuff from the same sales.
But historically, you know, travel wasn't possible.
Right.
So you had, you know, local groups of people, right, that had they developed their own sense of style, their own, like, whatever resources they had.
Heritage.
They developed,
yeah.
You know, so their outfits would look the same, mm-hmm. but very different than some people group that was 200 miles away.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, like, kind it of was making like, their mark.
It's not really feasible to travel 200 miles away. So, like, you didn't.
No.
So I think that was really cool. This movie kind of focuses on people groups that were like...
And some of it was crazy outlandish. We talked about the guys with those huge hats.
Yeah.
You're like, how can you even function?
And yeah.
But they didn't look fake either. Like we've seen other movies where you're like, oh my gosh, this yeah. costuming is just plaster and duct tape and stupid. But these looked like somebody put some time and effort and money into
yeah.
these costumes.
Yeah.
So I think you can probably tell from my tone that the award for best costuming in my book, and I think you agree with this, is going to Red Sonja.
I agree. So they get an attacky.
Yeah. Red Sonja gets an attacky for best costuming because they may not have spent their money on other things, but they definitely spent it on costuming.
Yeah. Yes. Excellent choice. So, the next category, and this gets into the shallow territory, which, you know, you can come to expect with Jeff and Kim. But this is
okay
the next two. Next two categories, we have most enthralling actress and most becoming actor.
Mm-hmm. It's our podcast, dang it. We're going to do what
we
want.
We can do what we want. So basically, most enthralling actress, most easy on the eyes, whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
So the five that we've selected, you have Kim Novak, that plays Judy and Madeline in Vertigo.
Mm-hmm.
And Nancy Kovac. They're not related, by the way.
I know. It's confusing.
Novak, yeah, two Kovacs.
No, one Novak, one Kovac.
Yeah, one Novak, one Kovac. But Nancy Kovac plays Medea in Jason and the Argonauts. Terry Garr plays Inga in Young Frankenstein. And that was tough because you really could have gone, you know, with
Madeline Kahn.
Madeline Kahn. But she was in half the movie.
Yeah,
so
you don't see her a lot.
Terry Garr kind of gets the nod there. And then Darlene Flugel, who plays Nanilia in Battle Beyond the Stars.
Oh, yeah.
And Barbara Steele, who plays Asa and Katya in Black Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you were just going with most enthralling actress, like, as far as not what's in the movie,
mm-hmm.
you think, well, you know, what the heck, guys? Sharon Stone, she was in Sphere, and she's obviously, like, one of the most gorgeous people ever. But
right.
in Sphere, you know, she just is kind of crazy, right? Like,
yeah,
she's battling
for sure.
her inner demons, and the way she presents herself is in a way that's, like, kind of a tortured soul.
Yeah. It's not her most attractive character.
Yeah, yeah. So you have to think, like, this isn't just who's the hottest actor or actress. This is a case where, like, per the movie.
And the character they're portraying.
The character they're portraying, the context mm-hmm. of the film. So really, you know, it comes down to me when I think through these. You know, Kim Novak, like you said, is very buttoned up, very Hitchcock-esque, mm-hmm. you know, kind of in her presentation. Looks perfect, like gorgeous.
Yeah.
But there's something dark and sinister behind that, like a sadness, a darkness. You know, so she's got that going for her, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have Nancy Kovac, who just basically is on this list. What's tough about Nancy Kovac is her voice was overdubbed
yeah.
by somebody. And that, like, you don't feel that same connection that you would if it was her own voice.
Yeah, it's almost like there's a mismatch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that bothers me a little bit about her character.
Yeah. She's now, stunning. She's a beautiful woman. But
oh, man.
You can tell, like, something doesn't quite match up.
I would recommend watching Diary of a Madman with Vincent Price.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She's in that film, and that's her own voice. And you kind of see her, like, acting more naturally.
Right.
So, again, this isn't really best actress. Like, she acts more in Diary of a Madman that you
right.
kind of see that. But, you know, just that scene where they're in the temple and she's, like, doing that performance where she's painted green and everything.
Yeah.
Like, all that alone is like, oh, my gosh. Like, that's really,
she's
you know,
stunning.
Attractive and stunning. Mm-hmm. Terry Garr has that girl next door flavor to her.
yeah.
You know, she has that naivety that I love. You know, somebody that's, like, not, you know, of the dark and, you know, nastiness of this world.
right.
But she's also brilliant, you know, like
yeah.
she's a scientist assistant.
She's not playing just a dumb blonde, I
yeah.
think is what we talked about.
Yeah. And that's kind of the same as Darlene Flugel and Nanilia, you know, as Nanilia in Battle Beyond the Stars.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this girl is like designing androids.
Mm-hmm. She's fixing her dad's problems. Like,
yeah.
you know, she's a robotics engineer.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, I think of Terry Garr and Darlene like being more like you, you know, like they're just really intelligent.
Thank you.
You know, but, like, not caught up in the garbage that this world has to offer, right?
Okay.
And then Barbara Steele, what's really awesome about Barbara Steele, she's kind of like that goth flavor.
Yeah.
You know, she kind of has that otherworldly beauty. Like, if you looked at Barbara Steele, you wouldn't say, like, this is model-esque type, you know, beauty
mm-hmm.
that's coming out here. And I like that. I like that she's
right.
the... antithesis to the typical beauty.
She doesn't
right?
look like a Barbie doll. Yeah.
No.
Not at all.
She's got these big, strange eyes. Kind of looks otherworldly beauty. You
right.
know?
Dark, so, dark hair.
Yeah.
And she really set the standard moving forward for that goth look. Like,
yeah.
she kind of put the stamp on that, and
mm-hmm.
so many people came after her that leaned into that.
Yeah, for sure.
She's a brunette champion.
yeah. Yeah, of this list for sure. And, you know, I think there's a lot of goth guys that may be listening to this. You know, several thousands of goth guys that I'm sure are all digesting
oh, wow.
this podcast, right?
That's optimistic.
and they're all saying, Jeff, you got to pick Barbara Steele. You got to pick Barbara Steele. But for me, you know, I'm more of that girl next door.
You
know, that's what I like. I like kind of the nerdy beauty. And so it came down to me.
With a silly sense of humor.
Yeah. kind of that goofy side to her, too. So it came down to Darlene Flugel and Terry Garr. And I think because what tipped it in Terry Garr's favor is just that kind of zaniness, like silliness. And I like a good silly girl. That's why, you know, you and I are together. So for the attacky, for most enthralling actress, it goes to Terry Garr as Inga in Young Frankenstein.
Congratulations, Terry Garr. All right, so that means I get to do the most becoming actor.
Yes.
All right, so you can probably tell that, you know, Kurt Russell's going to hit this list, right? Jack Burton, Big Trouble in Little China. We'll come back to him in a minute. I think the other four that would make this list for me most becoming actors. Charlton Heston, he plays Dr. Robert Neville in Omega Man. Charlton Heston is a man's man, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's in charge, and he's very, you know, self-possessed kind of guy. Like, he's going to take care of business, you know? And then, of course, we have Christopher Lambert plays Connor McLeod in Highlander. I liked his character a lot in the Scottish Highlands when he has the longer hair and he looks like a Scottish Highlander.
Yeah.
When he gets into 1980s New York and starts wearing trench coats and white tennis shoes and looks like he lives in his grandmother's basement playing video games all day. He loses a bit for me.
Well, you know, he lost his wife at that point.
He had been through a lot of wife. Crap. Okay, I'll give him.
So you like him as a happily married man in the Highlands.
Well, and he's like robust and he's like living on the Highlands and he's a, I don't know, Scottish guy.
Yeah.
You know,
long
thing for a guy
too,
with long hairs, right? Like, I married a guy with long hair. If you know Jeff now, you may not know that he had a ponytail when we got married. who else is on this list? Nigel Green from Hercules, or who plays Hercules in Jason and the Argonauts.
Now, this is curious because you picked him over Jason.
Yeah, so Jason is the central character of Jason and the Argonauts, right?
Yeah.
But I picked Nigel Green over Jason because Jason's character is a little too young for me.
Yeah.
Like, he's just a bit naive and not in a great way. You know, if you're looking for, like, strapping young man or strapping man in general, it's going to, like, take charge and take care of business. Jason feels a little not quite there, whereas Nigel Green's character as Hercules is, like, he's a man's man, you know, and he's kicking butt and taking names. And
I love his entrance in this film, too. Like, when he kind of, like, everyone starts celebrating him as Hercules. He like rolls in the sand and jumps up and people are just like cheering with him.
It's like he has this triumphant entrance kind of thing.
Yeah.
But there's a little bit of he doesn't take himself too seriously either.
No.
And I like that. I clearly like someone with a sense of humor.
We talked about this earlier too, but he's got this other side.
True.
So like when his friend is smashed by Talos and he doesn't know it. And like, does he go on with the group?
He's like,
mission?
Oh, well, cut my losses. I'm going with Jason. Nope.
He's like, I have to find my friend because I feel a sense of responsibility.
Exactly. And I think that's what draws me to him. There's a sense of like nobility and responsibility and just a virtue there that I appreciate. Yeah. So I think that's why I'm drawn to Nigel Green as Hercules. And then last but not least is Brandon Lee as Eric Draven in The Crow.
Yeah.
So if we're talking, you mentioned this with the ladies category. So with the men's category here, most becoming actor, if we're going on looks alone, right, we're probably narrowing this list down to, I don't know, Brandon Lee and Kurt Russell,
right?
Like they're beautiful men, handsome guys, muscled up, you know, whatever.
Right.
Kind of have this cool factor going. So we'd go straight to those two. But again, like, I love Hercules' character. I love the humility and, like, he realized he messed up and he needed to go back and make sure there was nothing else he could do for his friend before he just left him behind, right? So he kind of makes, I'd say he makes my top three more than Eric Draven does. Now, does Eric Draven come back to kind of fight for his woman who was murdered and himself? Yes, there's good qualities there too, but I don't know. It just wasn't as much of it there for me as it was in the Hercules character. And then, of course, Charlton Heston, he's a little old for me.
Yeah.
But he's a guy, like, if you're going to face a worldwide literal pandemic that wipes out.
He's a good guy to have on your side.
I'd say Charlton Heston's the guy you want around, right? Like, he is a man's man. He's taking care of business. He's not fearful. He doesn't question himself. He makes decisions and he moves forward, right?
Right.
So that's, I think those are very attractive attributes to have.
Right.
But ultimately,
we know where this is going.
You know where this is going. The attacky is going to go to Kurt Russell in Big Trouble in Little China as Jack Burton.
Yeah.
Yes, it's our most rewatchable film. I love, if you've listened to this podcast at all, you know I love Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
Because, yes, he's a man's man, and he's uber confident, and he makes decisions and goes with it, but he's also super goofy.
Yeah.
And makes mistakes all over the place. Like, he is an everyman, you know? Like, and he just rolls with it. Like, he just goes with it, and it doesn't stop him or slow him down.
Yeah.
I love that about him, that he just is, like, confident, maybe to a fault.
Right.
And maybe screws things up, but he just keeps plugging through life.
Yeah.
And he's just, I just love that about him. He's so, I don't know, accessible and funny.
One thing Kim doesn't like is a sulky guy.
Ugh.
So, you know.
I don't like sulky, period.
So, Kurt Russell as Jack Burton, like, he makes mistakes, but he just picks up and keeps going.
Pick yourself right up and move it. On.
And I think that's what she likes about him. And so, I'm sure the muscles don't hurt. And, you know, there's the,
I mean, his face,
the big smile.
You know, like, his face is not hard to look at.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It's fine.
Maybe not the mullet. The mullet probably wasn't.
I mean, the 80s mullet, we can leave in the 80s. That's fine. But I started watching that movie in the 80s, so it didn't bother me then, because everybody was, and now everybody has a mullet again.
Yeah.
I call these kids in our kids' youth group.
Bridget Nielsen could have easily made my list, and she had like the worst mullet ever.
Oh, she had a terrible mullet.
Yeah. But I mean, she had that, we talked about it in our episode, like that powerful physique, you know, just amazing, but that hair was terrible.
Oh, that hair was so bad.
You know what? That's why you take them to, you know, a beautician, right?
Right.
All right, so our next category for attackies is Best Halloween Party Film.
Ah.
So this is something you won't get on the Oscars, and that's why you listen to this podcast, for these kind of categories. So these are movies that if you're having a Halloween party, and this is something the Henshaws don't have a lot of parties.
No.
But every year.
We don't.
Our youngest was born on Halloween night.
That's right. He has a Halloween birthday.
So every year we do have a Halloween party. It's kind of dual purpose as Halloween and birthday party.
That's true.
But as far as what movie are you going to have playing on in the background while you have this Halloween party going on?
Mm-hmm.
So our nominees include Black Sunday,
mm-hmm.
Horror of Dracula, Invasion of the Body Snatchers. So the fourth nominee is The Monster Squad. And then lastly is The Gorgon.
Okay.
So when I go through these movies, I mean, you can't go wrong with any of these, really. They're all great to have on. I mean, The Monster Squad, you have the Universal Monsters, you know, which is like screams Halloween, right?
Right.
Dracula, the Wolfman, you
Frankenstein's
know.
Monster.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody. Mummy.
Exactly. So you can't go wrong there. The Gorgon, of course, has that hammer horror, that richness of the landscapes, the beauty of it. Of course, you have Medusa, and you have Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing on in the background. You can't go wrong there either. And then Black Sunday, of course, has that rich gothic horror look, you know, black and white, just real
stark.
Gritty.
Yeah.
And then, like we talked about Barbara Steele, like she has just such a look about her that like screams Halloween.
It does, yeah. Yeah.
But you know, the attackee has to go to the last nominee. Did I mention Invasion of the Body Snatchers yet?
Yeah, you did.
Okay, yeah.
But you didn't talk about it.
So Invasion of the Body Snatchers is really cool, 1950s. I think of it more of a sci-fi, even though it's horror.
Yeah.
I think of it as more of a sci-fi
film. It feels more sci-fi. Yeah. You could still have it on during a Halloween party, but it's not as Halloween-y as these other. And I think I just made that word up, but go with it.
Halloween-y, yeah.
Halloween-y.
So the attackee winner for Best Halloween Party Film is Horror of Dracula.
Oh, yeah. You can't go wrong with that.
Yeah. You know, it's a Hammer film, so you have those lush, rich backgrounds, you know, the matte paintings. You have Dracula. You have Van Helsing. You have vampire ladies. You have Stakes of the Heart, that real deep red fake blood that Hammer has. You really can't go wrong. Nobody can really be offended by this movie.
No. Like, it's got creep factor, but nobody's going to walk through your house and be like, oh, disgusting. I can't believe this is on your screen right now. You know, because it's just like Crayola-colored red paint.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's great.
It's a classic horror film. So, that's our winner for the Best Halloween Party Film.
Kudos. Excellent. All right, so that's Best Halloween Party Film. Let's talk about the most rebootable film. So what is, out of all 20 films that we've watched this season, what is the film that we'd like to give a second chance to, basically? Like, breathe a second life into this film. What do we think can be done better in 2021, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're going for here.
So, yeah, and in a lot of cases, these are films that maybe could have been a little better.
Right. Like, we wanted just a little more out of them.
Exactly. Modern sensibilities, modern budget.
Exactly. So the nominees are The Gorgon, where we dealt with a Medusa-like character, right?
Mm-hmm.
Battle Beyond the Stars, The Monster Squad, Something Wicked This Way Comes, and The Sphere.
Yes.
So let's talk about Sphere, because initially I thought, well, Sphere, that should be the rebooted one, right?
Yeah.
Because it's the most modern out of these. And we've come so far with our you know, modern science knowledge and the ability to showcase these things on screen and all of the space movies that have come out in recent years even.
And also, of all the 20 movies, the Sphere was basically the most disappointing.
It was.
I think it was the only film where we both said
nay
on this one.
I think we did. I think it might have been the only one that we both agreed on that. But really, what it comes down to is the story just doesn't give me enough to work with.
Yeah.
So I don't think I want to reboot that. Like, budget-wise and technology-wise, do I think we could make something out of it in 2021? Yes.
For sure.
But the story is lacking. There's just, I never got, like, what the heck was even in the Sphere? How can we just, like, pretend to forget it and it goes away? I don't know. There was a lot of holes in that story. So I don't think it's the Sphere for me. Again, Monster Squad, Battle Beyond the Stars... Battle Beyond Stars in particular suffered from a lack of budget. It was pretty low budget. It's basically Magnificent Seven set in space. So I think that could be rebooted and done okay.
They did the best with the budget they had. But what if they had a large budget today?
It could be better.
Yeah, it could be.
It could be better. And Monster Squad, like, I kind of like it where it is. It's got that 80s nostalgia. And I honestly, I was thinking back, like... What was the last great movie we had with like a gaggle of kids, you know, that are kind of defeating a common enemy or working together? I had to go all the way back to The Sandlot or maybe Shazam. Okay.
Shazam was good.
Shazam was good. So maybe we could reboot this.
You have things like Stranger Things.
That's true. Stranger Things.
But it was a throwback to the 80s.
Exactly.
Again.
Still, we're going back to that 80s nostalgia. So I'm not sure I worry what Monster Squad looks like in 2021. I don't know
redone,
if I want to mess with it.
Yeah, like you and I, you know, we're not young, obviously.
No.
You're younger than me. But like when we watch Nickelodeon, you know, you see these young teenagers and stuff, and you're like, I don't know.
Do we watch Nickelodeon?
Well, we do when we're at the beach, right?
Where there's cable. Yeah, I don't even know if Nickelodeon actually exists anymore, but like Disney Channel, that sort of stuff. Yeah.
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 Yeah, so I don't know about modern teenagers fighting universal monsters. I don't know. It seems like we're like too cynical of a people.
Yeah, yeah. Unless they did like throwback, like we just mentioned it.
Shazam.
Stranger Things. You know. Maybe, but it worries me. I don't know if I need them messing with Monster Squad. So really, to me, it comes down to the Gorgon or Something Wicked This Way Comes. When we watched the Gorgon on that episode, we talked about, like, it really suffered from just bad...
Special effects.
Like, when her head gets lopped off and land, like, it's just bad. Like,
so terrible.
We literally have... a handmade Gorgon head in a closet here in this house that looks better than what's in that movie.
Yeah.
And you painted that on a styrofoam mannequin head.
Yeah, it was my first try. Actually, my second try.
Yeah, and it literally looks better than it. So I think the Gorgon could really benefit from some upgraded, you know,
I think it's cool,
effects.
Too, just like Grecian, you know, mythology. I think that's kind of cool in a horror context. Because you don't get a lot of that.
Yeah, and there we did see it. What was... it wasn't a reboot of Jason and the Argonauts, but in recent years... Oh, I know what I'm thinking of. Clash of the Titans, the reboot of Clash of the Titans, which was like, what, 11 years
ago? Yeah, 2010. You and I saw that in the theater.
We did.
3D. That was one of the first 3D films you and I watched together.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Okay, so we're telling our age. But yeah, so even in that one, they tried to reboot... the whole Gorgon Medusa thing. I don't know.
Even then, it was more of an action flair and not really horror.
Yeah, that's true. That's very much an action.
So I really like, I think the Gorgon, not the Oregon, that's a different movie altogether, but if you have the marriage of like Greek mythology plus horror.
Yeah, that was interesting.
That was interesting.
Yeah, so maybe that deserves a reboot. But what I think would really be best served in 2021 is Something Wicked This Way Comes. And that may just be my personal choice because we read the book and we watched the movie. And there's so much depth in the book that just couldn't be covered in the Disney film that I would love to see someone take a serious crack at.
And actually, when we gave the attackee to Something Wicked This Way Comes, we said, hey, let's make this like a three-part or four-part series, like a mini-series.
Yeah, it didn't have to be a movie. Exactly. Turn it into like a Stranger Things type mini-series or a Loki type, you know, just a handful of episodes or whatever to really play out this story.
Because I don't think you could do it in 90 minutes.
Probably not.
Not do it justice.
It probably needs a series.
I think, So that's what we're going with. Hollywood, get on it. three or four part miniseries, maybe Netflix or one of these streaming services.
Bring it back.
Let's bring it back.
So most rebootable film attackee goes to Something Wicked This Way Comes.
I like it.
All right.
So our next category is most powerful hero. Mm. You're like, what does that mean? Well, that means, let's say you're going to have a home invasion hit you. Maybe 20 bad dudes, ninjas, or whatever they may be, they're coming to gun for you.
Yikes.
In your house. So of these 20 films, you can select a hero to come save you.
All right.
And they're going to use whatever you have in your home. That's what they're going to use to help protect you. And of course, their own, you know, their brains, their brawn.
Their everything. Own special powers, whatever they have personally, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So when we say most powerful hero, we're not talking about if somebody has an amazing spaceship that can blast a whole planet or something like that. That's not what we're talking about.
Okay.
And we're not even saying like, you know, let's get a bad guy that's really powerful and make them protect us. That's not allowed.
It has to be the good guy.
It's got to be the good
guy. Based on his personal attributes.
Yeah. Okay. We have another category for baddies, right?
But yeah. We'll get to the baddies.
So most powerful hero, our nominees are Spock from Star Trek, the motion picture. Eric Draven from The Crow. Red Sonja from Red Sonja. The Nestor from Battle Beyond the Stars.
Mm-hmm.
And Frankenstein from The Monster Squad. So let's start with Monster Squad. You have Frankenstein, who's basically a human that's very powerful, that's been, rebirthed.
Reanimated.
So I think he's big and strong.
Right.
And obviously there's not a lot of ego or not a lot of brains going on. It's really you're going for power, right?
Right. Sheer power.
And durability to a degree. But the weakness there is he's still just a human body that's been reanimated. So
true.
I think you kill him, you know, he's dead again, right?
I guess.
I really like Eric Draven, that he kind of has this Wolverine thing going for him, the self-healing property.
Yeah,
Captain America
true.
Has it too. But we saw a pretty critical weakness in the movie, and that's if the actual crow, which is a raven.
The bird.
If you take out the bird... This guy's just a human.
Yeah. He's only alive and invincible because of that crow, which technically is a raven in the movie.
So if you have 20 bad guys invading your home and you have the crow there, I think it's great that he can regenerate. But, you know, he's doing like
moves.
And
he's real tough. Yeah.
He's tough. He's doing moves that a human would do. And it's one guy against 20. You know, I'm assuming that like I'm kind of in the corner, like just trying to stay alive, right?
Cheering him on.
And like, I don't know how much good he's going to do. That crow, a.k.a. Raven, if it gets killed, like, he's basically done
right.
for.
Right. How quickly do the bad guys figure out, like, oh, all I have to do is kill this bird. Well, we'll put a cat on that and be done here, right?
Now, the Nestor, you're like, who the heck's the Nestor? In Battle Beyond the Stars, you'll remember the scene where they eat the hot dog and they all taste it at the same time.
Yeah. It's the white-faced guys.
Yeah. So what's cool about them, if you remember, the guy that we know as John Boy, I don't remember what his name is.
What is his name?
Chad, Thad, Sad, Fad.
Oh my gosh.
What the heck's his name?
Anyway, I don't know. Hold on, I'll
Thad
look it up.
Or something? Well, she's going to look that up. But basically, remember, he points a gun at the Nestor and telepathically, they make him reverse the gun on himself. And they could make him pull the trigger on himself.
Yeah.
So That's pretty powerful if you can use telepathy to manipulate other people's movements. The weakness there, remember, one of them is being tortured, and they have almost no tolerance of pain. And so to me, this is their major weakness.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And so they just cut them off, basically. So if you have one person from the Nestor there, and they take a punch to the stomach, and they're like, oh, that hurts too much, and they cut them off. I think the Nestor is no good to help you.
No, yeah. Yeah, you got to have some sort of pain tolerance if you're going to be a tough, good guy.
Yeah. So for me, the most powerful hero comes down to two. You have Red Sonja, who has been blessed by some goddess with extreme power.
Right.
Amazing reflexes.
Fighting skills,
you know, the ability to heal and that kind of thing, which is amazing. And then you have Spock from Star Trek. Of course, you know, Spock, he's got like superhuman strength.
Really. Right.
But he also has obviously this amazing brain power.
Yeah. Super logical.
Super logical. The ability to like outthink anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, if you are being attacked by 20 dudes, you kind of want somebody that's able to think, because you can't just beat them with brawn. You need some smarts.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and he's going to be thinking quicker and ahead of everybody else.
Yeah.
And I think that's where Red Sonja finds her downfall, is she is emotional.
Yeah.
And gets bothered, especially by the whole, like, you know, no man can have me unless he can beat me in battle. Like, there's some faults tied up in that, because some it's a distraction. Yeah, there's some distraction for her in that stubbornness, whereas, you know, Spock doesn't have to deal with that. No. Like, he can just think his way through it. And he's, like, super strong.
Yeah, yeah. So the attackee for most powerful hero goes to Spock from Star Trek, the motion picture.
Kudos to Spock. And I will say, as an addendum here, John Boy's character in Battle Beyond the Stars' name is Shad. You were very close.
Shad.
Shad with an S-H.
Thank you for clarifying that.
You're very welcome.
So our next category is most evil baddie.
All right. So if we have a most powerful hero, let's talk about the most evil baddie in these movies. So let's look at Highlander first. We've got Clancy Brown playing the Kurgan. I think it's like his title and his name, right? Like, he's horrible. Like and I think like when I talk about being horrible, I think that gives you a higher ranking in the most evil baddie category, right? The more you're hated, the better baddie you are.
Yeah.
So he's like, he licks nuns' faces and like yells in priests' faces and, you know, carjacks old ladies. I mean, he runs people off the road, terrifies them. Yeah. Just has no sense of decorum whatsoever. Yeah. Like, he's terrible. So in my mind,
he rapes our good guy's wife.
Oh, yeah. Early in the movie, he rapes the good guy's wife. And kills
our good guy's best friend.
Exactly. Like, this guy is the worst of the worst. That's a baddie. That is a baddie. So he's kind of setting the standard for us. The Kurgan, not a great guy. He's a pretty good baddie.
Yeah.
All right. So let's change genres a little bit and talk about Mars Attacks. This is a movie that hasn't come up a lot in our attackees.
Yeah.
But those Martians, I'm not digging them. They're horrible. We've talked about this in multiple episodes that I am not a fan of dark humor anyhow. They're just horrible to be horrible.
Yeah.
I hate these Martians. Like, they're going to blast the head off of an old lady who's sitting listening to her Victrola records or something. Yeah,
they could just shoot her with a gun, but instead they bring in this impossibly humongous, like, ray gun.
Yeah, they're going
to back it up to the back of her head.
Blow her to smithereens.
And the whole time they're snickering.
Yeah, so they're, like, laughing about it. They're like Garbage Pail Kids to me. I mean, that's what I think of when I think of the Martians from Mars Attacks. They're pretty terrible baddies. They have a lot of technology, a lot of gunpower. I mean, they for a while there, you're really thinking like, well, Earth is doomed because these guys do not care. They have no ulterior motive. They just want to kill everything in sight, right?
Yeah.
That makes a pretty terrible baddie.
They do it. So what makes them on this list, though, is they do it like with a love of evil.
Yeah.
So like they shrink that one guy.
Oh, yeah.
And then they stomp on him.
Yes.
Like they could, again, they have these powerful guns. If they just shoot you, like you're
dead.
That
made me think of Yzma from Emperor's New Groove. Smash it with a hammer.
Yeah, there's this impossible scheme. Like, oh, you're really going to do that and then kill him?
Right.
So they're just evil.
They just love evil for the sake of evil.
So that's why they're on this list.
That makes them a most evil baddie, for sure. And then we've talked about several times now, Something Wicked This Way Comes. We've got Jonathan Pryce playing Mr. Dark.
Yeah.
Now, he is pretty sinister, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's seemingly nice, like a good guy, because he's bringing the carnival to town.
Yeah.
That's a good thing, right? Everybody loves a carnival.
Educated, a bit on the posh side.
Yeah, posh.
So there's something that's like, his presentation is very likable.
It's tricky. It's very tricky, because you on the surface level, you think, oh, this guy's cool.
Yeah.
And he's bringing us a cool thing to our town, our little schmaltzy little town.
But what makes him evil, though, and he says it in the movie, is basically they feed on fear.
Exactly.
They feed on like the greed and the evil of mankind.
Dark. Exactly. It's really, really dark presence and with the like a wolf in sheep's clothing, which I think is a really key characteristic of a good baddie.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we've got Vincent Price. And, of course, we in this series, in this season, I should say, we've watched him in Twice Told Tales. So he's technically playing three different baddies.
Right.
But the one we're going to hone in here is from The House of Seven Gables, where he plays Gerald Pynchon. He's this greedy, conniving brother. Mm-hmm. So greedy, so conniving, that he's okay with killing his own sister with a pickaxe.
Yeah. Right to the forehead.
I mean, like, no compulsion, like, no, nothing. Like, he just, no holds barred.
And his new wife.
And he's okay with doing away with his new wife. Like, he has...
Just money. He wants money.
He wants money, cold-hearted. No compunction, no, you know, just totally thoughtless greed. Yeah.
Those are pretty nasty traits.
Those
pretty
are
evil
all
traits.
Pretty nasty traits. But you know who I think really takes the cake? In The Crow, we've got the actor David Patrick Kelly. He plays T-Bird and then his little gang of misfits.
Yeah.
Of all the baddies, I hated these guys the most.
Yeah.
They were horrific.
Yeah.
I mean, they just... I mean, really, like, raped and pillaged their way through a town.
Yeah.
And just, like, the Martians were that evil in Mars Attacks, but they're fictional and they're CGI and they look a little silly to me, right?
Yeah.
These guys look like real humans living in a real city and just wanted to run amok and wreak havoc for the sake of being horrible humans.
Yeah.
And that I just detest. I can't take it.
And I know you don't like dark humor, but I think the Kurgan, he rapes and kills. And he's nasty as can be. But he's got that dark humor going for him. So you can, you, even though you don't like dark humor, you can recognize they're playing some of this for a little of those dark laughs. Like the way he treats the nuns and the priest and stuff like that.
He's just gross for kicks.
Yeah. And the Martians are nasty. They're horrible.
But they're fake.
But they're fake. And they also, like, they're leveraging dark humor a little bit.
True.
There's nothing funny about T-Bird and the gang. And we talked about this in our 20th episode. Like, you relive that rape of the Crow's wife, or his fiance, rather.
Yeah.
You relive it because his gang has four different people.
Right. So we have to keep retelling that story every time he seeks revenge
on
one of those gang members.
And there's no element of comedy. There's no levity to it. It's just dark and awful. And you hate those guys.
Oh, man, I hate those guys. Hey, they just revel in evil. And I have no tolerance for that whatsoever. And I will say, I think you and I have had this conversation before. Like, the Kurgan and maybe the Martians. I don't know. That might get a little weird. But Mr. Dark and Something Wicked This Way Comes. It's almost like being evil is part of their created purpose. Like, I don't want to get deep into the weeds on theology on all of that. But it's like... they have to do these things and they can't escape it.
Right.
You know, like, I don't know if Mr. Dark has made some deal with the devil or he is the devil.
Yeah.
But that's like a role. And it's not that you excuse their behavior or you're okay with it, but it makes a little more sense than these guys that are like, you know, T-Bird and his gang of misfits. Like, they could choose better for themselves. They could do different. They don't have to live this nasty, horrible existence.
Yeah.
But they're doing it anyways and reveling in it. And it just, blech.
So we have three more categories. If you're like, oh, Jesus, this is over an hour long. What's going on, guys?
Pause and come back later.
Yeah. There's three categories left. And these are a little more traditional. This one is Best Music Soundtrack.
That's right.
Our nominees are Mars Attacks, which was scored by Danny Elfman.
Mm-hmm.
We have House, which was scored by Harry...
Manfredini?
Manfredini. We have Battle Beyond the Stars, scored by James Horner.
Mm-hmm.
Star Trek The Motion Picture, scored by Jerry Goldsmith. And then The Crow, which is basically various artists coming together for a soundtrack. So if this were the Oscars, you would have best soundtrack, you would have best score in another category.
As a separate thing.
For us, we're combining them into one. We only have 20 films to choose from.
Sure.
So, you know, the one that kind of sticks out here, of course, is The Crow. We talked about it quite a bit. If you kind of like that 1990s meets industrial music.
Yeah.
So grunge plus industrial from the 1990s, you get The Crow soundtrack.
Yep.
And it's really good and dark and, you know, moody.
Takes you right back to high school if you grew up in the 90s.
Yeah. And if you didn't, you can listen to it and say, oh, that's what my parents went through. You know? So Mars Attacks has an amazing score by Danny Elfman. I don't know of any score that he's done that's been bad. He is one of my favorite, you know, movie scorers. He's amazing. But, you know, this one doesn't win it for me because I feel like I could name five other Danny Elfman scores that are better than this
one. Right. Yeah, I could agree with you on that.
I think that main theme, like in the beginning of the movie, when you have those UFOs that are coming in from Mars to Earth, that main theme that plays is awesome.
Right.
Now, this is interesting. So House has a cello score for most of the horror elements. But then it's got some Linda Ronstadt songs that are in there too, sprinkled in.
Which is weird.
It kind of is this weird mixture. So one thing, when I watched the movie The Joker, or Joker, you know.
The newest.
The newest one.
Yeah.
With Joaquin Phoenix.
Right.
That movie won a best score, right? It won an Oscar.
Yeah.
Because of this cello score that this young lady put together, which was amazing.
Right.
Well, when I'm watching that movie, I'm actually thinking of the movie House. Because a lot of the horror elements had the same kind of feel. Yeah. It's got this just a cello on its own playing.
Yeah. Well, a cello can have a very haunting sound. I love a cello.
I love it. I love it. But I would say if it just had the cello, this would win.
Right.
But then the Linda
Ronstadt
songs are funny. They add to the levity of the film. And I love the film and it works. But for me, that's why it doesn't win.
Like almost cheapens it a bit.
It cheapens it. Yeah. It's just too, I don't know, too hot and cold there.
Yeah.
So really, for me, it comes down to two movies, and that's Battle Beyond the Stars. So James Horner created a score that Roger Corman used time and time again.
Yes.
Four or five films, he used the same score, and it's really epic. Amazing.
Right. It's got that classic orchestral feel. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's kind of beyond what this movie is, Battle Beyond the Stars. Yeah. The movie, you know, it's like a score beyond this movie, right?
Battle Beyond the Score.
Yeah. But for me, hands down, Jerry Goldsmith gets the award here. It gets the Attackee for Star Trek, the motion picture. Okay. So it's got that theme that you know from the Next Gen series. Da, 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 da.
Oh, yeah.
Da, 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 da,
like
da.
Anybody almost anywhere can hear that and know it's Star Trek, right? Oh. Like our kids hear that and know Star Trek.
Yeah.
So it really kind of just like set the pace for Star Trek.
And it redid the Klingon theme from the old series. Like, there's just so many pieces that is so amazing. And then, you know, it also made use of kind of electronic sounds for, like, if you remember in V'ger, the bad guy used this kind of this dark, sinister keyboard sound. So, anyway, Jerry Goldsmith, you get an Attackee for Star Trek, the motion picture.
Good job. We have no trophy to send you to put to add to your other trophies that I'm sure you have, but there you go. You have an Attackee. All right, so we're down to best leading actress, and then Jeff is going to tackle best leading actor. So let's talk about the leading actresses in these movies we watched. First, I want to hit on Honor Blackman. She plays Hera and Jason in The Argonauts, and I love the interaction, more so than the interaction with Jason and Medea later in the movie. Mm-hmm. I think the interaction with Honor Blackman as Hera and Jason is better. It's the stronger pairing in the movie, and it's almost like Hera's a motherly figure to him. She's very attached to him and doting. Yeah. And when you start seeing Jason breaking away from her and doing, well, basically Hera runs out of favors she can offer because Zeus limits her. Like, you can give him five favors and you're done, right? Yeah. So once that's done, Jason's got to make his own way, and he meets Medea. Mm-hmm. And it's like realizing, like, you know, kind of a, he's going to like become a man, he's falling in love for the first time, that whole sort of thing is happening, and you see Hera kind of work, and there's not a lot of dialogue there, you don't get a ton of dialogue, but it's really worked out on her face and in her actions, her emotions are there.
Yeah.
It's almost like that mom cutting the apron strings kind of thing, or being forced to cut the apron strings, you know? So I think she does a great job with that.
There's this 6-second clip in the movie.
Uh-huh.
Where she's looking down, you know, on Jason's life. Of course, she can't interact with Jason anymore, to your point.
Right. She only had 5. Used her favors.
She only used, yeah, she used all 5. And she sees him kissing Medea.
Mm.
And so you wonder, like, is there jealousy there? Is this like a love thing? Like, I would like to be with Jason. I wish I was Medea kissing him right now. You and I talked about this earlier, and I kind of feel like it might be akin to like a mother seeing her son not listen to her anymore and go with her, you know, his
leaving and cleaving.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. His spouse. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally think that's what's happening there. And Honor Blackman plays it. A little jealousy and a tinged with sadness and realizing like, I think this has to happen, but it's like, mm-hmm. Oh, you're not mine anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I have to share you now.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
And I think she's on this list, really. Part of that is because that complexity there.
Yeah, there's a lot of complexity, and she doesn't get a ton of dialogue, but it's still there. The complexity is there without the dialogue, and I love that. I love when you can feel that complexity, and you don't have to say it.
And the way she really plays Zeus, too, is like, it's her husband.
Yeah.
But, you know, the way she plays off him is really good.
Yeah, it is. That's true. That's true. So kudos to Honor Blackman as Hera. Yeah. She does a great job there. And you brought up Terry Garr earlier. I think she does a great job as Inga, as a leading lady. And again, we have the great Madeleine Kahn in this movie of Young Frankenstein also, but we see very little of Madeleine Kahn. Terry Garr really is the leading lady in this movie, and she plays it so well. She's such a great foil for Gene Wilder. They're both silly, but where he has this intensity, she has this naivety that softens it, you know?
Right.
She does a great job with that. And I think Rosalind Cash, mm-hmm. as Lisa in Omega Man, deserves a spot here, too.
Yeah.
You know, this was a 1960s, 70s? When was that
70s,
film?
Yeah,
70s. So 1970s. So we're right out of kind of, you know, that just
kind of revolution that was going on.
Yeah, there's a
social revolution.
Exactly. Kind of social revolutions going on. And she is playing the love interest of an older white male and just does it, upholds that role so well. And she's so BA, right? Like she's taking care of her own and she doesn't really need Charlton Heston, but it's nice that they have this connection and that, you know,
you didn't see that much, right? Like a white lead and an African-American female lead, right?
No, this was new-ish.
It was new-ish. And then she was so much younger than him. And she even said, you know, I watched an interview where she talked about like, it's a little weird. She's making out with Moses.
Yes. Because, I mean, that's what we think about when we think of Charlton Heston, right? Yeah, like he's always these older
Moses or Ben-Hur,
Old Testament type characters. Yeah, it's a weird, but she pulls it off brilliantly. Like you don't even question it. You know, she plays it so well. So kudos to Rosalind Cash. And then of course, Kim Cattrall. I think I'm showing my bias here, but we're coming back to Big Trouble in Little China. I think Kim Cattrall played so well off of Kurt Russell. You know, like she's smart, she's wise, she's streetwise. Like she sees what's coming before Kurt Russell ever can.
And she's a great foil for his character.
Oh yeah, like super quick-witted, sharp-tongued. Like she's just like where he's like an uber optimist, she's a realist. Yeah. You know? So it's just a great pairing. I think she does a great job there. But I think the attacky here for me, and for you, I believe, is going to go to Kim Novak, who plays, again, two parts in Vertigo. She plays Judy and Madeline, and is just phenomenal.
Yeah.
And we've talked about that movie is stunning. There's so much thought and ingenuity just behind the character building and the staging and the setting and the costuming and everything. And then she just pulls off two completely different characters so well that you've talked about this before. When you first watched this movie, you didn't even realize it was the same actress playing the two parts. You know,
I didn't see what Jimmy Stewart saw when he saw Judy.
Yeah.
Kind of this blue collar lady. And like, how is he seeing her, you know, as Madeline?
Right.
Because she's so different. Like it's 180.
So different. Yeah. So completely different. Personality, the way she dresses, just everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
So completely different. And so you didn't even realize, like, oh, wait, no, this is literally the same
person.
I think that's brilliant. That's so amazing that she was able to pull that off.
Yeah.
That's so great.
Good job, Kim Novak. But, you know, something I want to say, too, because I don't think you and I are...
And you're right, by the way. She's 88, still alive.
Oh, good. I don't think you and I are super progressive when it comes to politics or kind of like the,
no,
the agenda, right? You know, but one thing about the 20th century in our first 20 movies, we kind of struggled with putting together five amazing leading actresses.
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. That's very true.
And so something that we want to be intentional about in season two is maybe pick some movies that have kind of some more groundbreaking leading actresses.
Stronger actress roles. Yeah. Because it really, I mean, even as amazing as all five of these ladies that we mentioned are, and the ones that we couldn't mention from the other movies that we watched, they're always second fiddle. Like,
yeah.
This is very much a man's world we're looking at here. So, you know, and sometimes the story calls for that, and that's just the way it is. And I'm okay with that. That's fine. But you're right.
We're like, literally 20 for 20, though.
Like, yeah.
It's a man's world in 20 out of 20 movies.
Yeah. The 20 movies we've watched, every woman is playing very much, maybe not even second fiddle a lot of times, third and fourth fiddle.
Yeah, you know? That's true. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's something that we're going to look at for season two. And if you have comments too, just for improvement, things that like other films and stuff that you think would be ideal for season two, just let us know.
Sure. Let us know.
So this is our final category for the Attackies. Best Leading Actor.
Mm-hmm.
And so the nominees are Charlton Heston playing Dr. Robert Neville in Omega Man, Jimmy Stewart playing Scotty in Vertigo, Kurt Russell playing Jack Burton in Big Trouble in Little China, Gene Wilder playing Dr. Frankenstein in Young Frankenstein.
Frankenstein.
And then Vincent Price, who plays several characters in Twice Told Tales.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to put Vincent Price on the list because, like we said, he is playing three different characters in this movie. It's three short stories. And he also is the narrator of the film.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
So he really pulls in quite a different characters and brings out different traits. But I don't think he wins because at the end of the day, he's still like two sides of the same coin.
Vincent Price is Vincent Price.
Yeah. He's got his dark, evil, sinister side. And then he kind of has his light, you know.
Quirky,
kind of odd kind of side. But we love Vincent Price, so you're definitely a nominee. Jimmy Stewart, who is amazing. We love Jimmy Stewart. He plays Scotty in Vertigo. And we talked about this. You know, we don't have a best movie category because we feel like that kind of cheapens the 20 that we did.
Mm-hmm.
We hate to pick just one.
Yeah. We were kind of all over the map from genres and time periods and all of that.
Yeah, yeah. It's a little weird to compare like a 1980s B movie with a 1960s classic.
Right, exactly.
You know? But anyway, but one thing you can say about Vertigo as far as, you know, the craftsmanship of this film.
Oh, yeah, exquisite.
Is, you know, second to none. I mean, it's amazing. And he carries a lot of this film.
He does. And I think similar to Vincent Price, he kind of has two roles that he commonly plays.
Right.
When we see Jimmy Stewart, we kind of know what to expect. He can be the Vertigo guy. It was very similar to his other Alfred Hitchcock characters, like Rear Window.
Yeah.
Or he can be the...
Aw shucks.
Yeah, the Harvey slash... what's the Christmas movie that we all love?
Yeah. Yeah, What a Wonderful Life.
Yeah, Wonderful Life. Wonderful Life, you know. So there's, you know, one of the two Jimmy Stewarts. I love Jimmy Stewart, but one of those two guys is going to show up.
Right. And Charlton Heston, similarly, like, I kind of feel like he gives you just one Charlton Heston.
Yeah.
Like, if you watch Charlton Heston, I love Charlton Heston. We talked about this for several of these old school actors.
This is their thing.
You kind of get them in these different movie scenarios.
That's true.
But it's their same personality. So this Charlton Heston is very similar to Planet of the Apes.
Ben-Hur.
You know.
Moses.
He's Ten Commandments.
He's serious. He's going to take charge, get the job done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, a sister movie to Omega Man is really Soylent Green. And he plays kind of the same character in that. And it's great because there's only one Charlton Heston. There's nobody else that does Charlton Heston.
You love Charlton Heston.
Yeah. Nobody else does him like him.
The one where he plays Michelangelo and he paints the Sistine Chapel?
Oh, yeah, yeah,
again,
yeah.
Is it? I mean, it's very much Charlton Heston, but it's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. Ah, gosh.
It's like the something and the something.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys.
That's a great one. Sorry, you're probably yelling at us right now. but then you have Kurt Russell. And we talked about this in our episode 2. You know, the movie executives watched this film and they said, hey, you know, we paid this money and we have this leading actor. Our leading man isn't really kicking butt and taking names like we thought.
He's a goofball.
He's kind of goofball. Like our final battle, he shoots the ceiling and the fragments hit his head and knock him out.
Yeah. He misses the whole big thing.
But, you know, Kurt Russell, you know, he talks about this, that he's basically doing John Wayne in this movie. So, like, what if John Wayne was a little bit of a goofball in modern times?
Is this like John Wayne meets Mr. Bean, sort of?
Yeah, a little bit, right?
Yeah.
But he pulls it off. Like, you still, at the end of the movie, you're like, I kind of want to be Jack Burton.
Yeah, he's still cool. As goofball as he is, he's still cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know too many people that could pull that off.
No, exactly.
You look at, like, say, like Michael Douglas. He was in the 80s. Could he pull something like that off?
Michael Douglas is serious.
No, I don't know. There's a lot of people from the 80s who are like, I don't really see it, you know.
No.
Sylvester Stallone?
No. Yeah.
Arnold Schwarzenegger? No.
No. Yeah.
So the attackee for Best Leading Actor goes to Gene Wilder as Dr. Frankenstein in Young Frankenstein. You look at what he does in this movie. It's his best acting that I know of throughout his career. But he kind of plays this zany, funny, weird guy.
Mm-hmm.
But he also plays this kind of crazy, like on the edge, like past, in, you know, sanity.
Yeah.
Two steps past sanity, right?
Yep.
But then he's doing a comedy. He's playing it straight.
Yeah, and he starts the movie playing it straight. Or at least you think he is.
Yeah. It's just perfect for each scene.
Yeah, I really think this movie encapsulates kind of every facet of Gene Wilder. You see a little bit of all of what Gene Wilder has to offer in this movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, because there's tons of movies where you see him being just the crazy, zany guy. But then there's some movies where you see him, he's the guy playing it straight.
Yeah.
And there's this undercurrent of wackiness and comedy, you know.
Yeah.
I can think of several movies with him in it that are like that. Some more PC than others. Most of them not very PC, actually. But I really feel like, yeah, this movie is just the, like, it just, I'm doing little hand motions here, like I'm scooping something up.
Yeah, yeah.
It really encapsulates kind of every facet of Gene Wilder.
Yeah.
And it's so great.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that's what we talked about this in the episode about this movie. We had seen an older interview with him where he was talking about, like, why did he agree to do this movie? And he had a love for the material. Like, he loved the old Frankenstein stories, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that comes through in his portrayal of it, too. Like, there's just a lot of passion, a lot of...
Well, he was a co-writer.
Yeah, that's true.
He was watching these old Frankenstein movies. And he knew them, like, sequentially. He knew the names of them.
Yeah,
and it wasn't the first one or the second one. It was, like, the third or fourth or fifth one.
Right.
And he got inspired, and he said, what if Frankenstein ended on a happy note?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what if it had a happy ending? So he started writing, like, just a two-page thing.
Yeah.
And then showed it to Mel Brooks, and then the two of them started collaborating. And, you know, I think that's really cool. You know, I think that's really part of why you see a lot of this passion in the movies. Like, he was a co-writer.
So I always want to know, like, what's the butterfly effect of that? Do you think that Quentin Tarantino has seen that interview of Gene Wilder or somehow knows of Gene Wilder's, like, love affair for Frankenstein? And so he, like, is like, let's twist it. Let's give it an alternate ending. And that's what inspired Tarantino to give the alternate endings to, like, the Nazi story with, what's the movie, Inglourious Bastards, or the... Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. You know, he gives, like, the whole, like, this is my kind of love song. What if we took Charles? Yeah. What if we took Charles Manson out before he was able to cause all the things that he caused, you know?
Yeah.
I wonder if there's any tie in there, or is that just like a, you know, two trains on parallel tracks?
You know, you think about creativity. That's a big part of it. Take something, all things that are the same, like consistent. What is that called? Constant variables.
Yeah.
And then you change one thing about it. You know? And I think that's a big part of creativity. You know, you look at a movie like Tremors, right? We talked about a guy is sitting on a rock, you know, and he's thinking as a kid, like, what if I was stuck here? What if I couldn't move?
Right.
What would that look like? And then that inspired him to write the movie Tremors.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So I think that's like, you know... I think that you're right. I could see where he says, well, what do I love about history? And then what do I hate about history?
Like, what if I could change it?
What if I change that one thing and turn that negative thing into a positive thing?
Yeah.
So yeah,
it's fun to think about. Who knows if Tarantino ever gave Gene Wilder a second thought or any thought whatsoever. But
right.
I like thinking about the what ifs.
Yeah. There. Yeah. Wow. So that wraps up our first Attackies.
Wow.
Season one is done. It's in the books.
In the books. That's right. Congrats to all of our Attackies winners.
Yes.
We have nothing for you, but if you hear about this and you want to be duly rewarded, contact us.
Yes.
We'll figure out something. We'll ship you some frozen goat's milk or something.
Yes, we do have goat's milk we could offer. I don't know how well it ships, though. That's a little weird.
I don't know. That was the first thing that came to mind. Why? I have no idea.
But yeah, throughout the summer, you know, we'll be posting these winners on our Instagram. We are most active on Instagram, more so than Facebook, I would say.
Yeah.
When does season two start? We're not sure yet. We're going to take a couple, 3 months off and just really kind of like recharge our batteries, figure out what movies we're going to watch.
Yeah.
And, you know, think through our format. We'll listen through our 20 episodes and say, what do we want to do different?
Sure. And we'd love some feedback. So let us know what you think, what you'd like to see or hear, I guess. You're not seeing anything from us.
Or do you want to see a video podcast?
Oh.
Probably not.
Oh, yeah, we're not there.
Yeah.
I might be in my pajamas recording these. You'll never know.
Yes, yes. So this is our first podcast, and we just wrapped our first season. So what do you think so far? What do you think about our first season so far?
I enjoyed it. You know, I've joked a few times, to say the least, of you dragging me into this and forcing me. This is an excuse to force me to watch your movies and not my movies. But I have enjoyed it. I love the learning process. So that's all. And I enjoy just random facts of doing a deep dive on these kind of things. But you know what kind of just struck me is there's a podcast that I listen to sometimes that I just learned about this year. And it's a couple that's a homeschooling family. You know, this is where I live. This is my space, right? It's a homeschooling family. I think they're in Montana. They're a lot of fun. Their kids are younger than ours. But they literally have a podcast just so the mom and dad can have a conversation during the week. Like, they're so busy, you know, running their kids here and there, which we can attest to, that they often don't have time to discuss things in their lives until they sit down and record the podcast.
Yeah.
And I will say they may talk deeper subjects than we often get into here. But it's their one time a week to like connect and like talk, and you know, they have little kids, so that's a whole different ball of wax. But I feel like this has served some of the same purposes for us.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's given us we have two teenagers and a quickly approaching tweenager in our house.
Yeah.
And boy, they lead busy lives.
Right.
So this has like forced us to make space to like do something together and then sit down and talk about it. Mm-hmm. And we've been able to bring in friends of ours, you know, Mike, your brother, Morgan, Ashton, that we don't always get to connect with because they're living busy lives also. And so it's been fun. It's kind of forced us to have conversations about things that, in the grand scheme of things, do they matter a whole hill of beans? I don't know, but I think communication with your fellow humans does matter, regardless of what you're communicating about. So that's been good. That's good. That's
many a date night has been spent recording a podcast.
It has. It has. Yes, it has.
And, you know, for the 50 to 60 minutes that you hear, there's always an hour or two of prep time.
Right.
Then there's usually like an hour and a half of material that we trim down, right?
Yes.
And then there's usually an hour or two of editing that goes on. I say hour or two, more like three or 4 hours.
I have to
give
all credit to Jeff on that. I do absolutely zero with editing. So that's all on Jeff. Kudos to you, man.
Oh, thank you.
Kudos is word of the night. Where's Pee Wee Herman when I need him to like everybody go, I think I've said that 200 times tonight. Yeah. But no, that's all on you, man.
Yeah, well, no, I'm glad you're doing this. I'm glad we're able to connect and watching these movies that, you know, I may or may not get you to watch otherwise. You might fall asleep if I put it on.
I do struggle to stay awake if I sit still in a chair, so this has forced me to try and muscle through movies that I would normally make excuse to take a nap.
Well, let me ask you, so we've done movies where neither of us have seen it.
That's true.
Or we've done movies where only you've seen it and I haven't seen it.
Mm-hmm.
We've done movies where only I've seen it and you haven't. And then it's movies that we both love or know from our past. Right. So, like, what's been kind of pros and cons or things that you like better about, like, those different formats?
Oh, gosh. Catching me on the spot here. Well, of course, I think it's just fun to reminisce about the movies that we've both seen and we love. I mean, obviously, coming right off of the Attackies discussion, I'd say Big Trouble in Little China, obviously, is one of those that, you know, we both just have special places in our hearts for growing up watching them, and just they're just fun.
Yeah,
you know, Jason and the Argonauts. Exactly, that was next on the tip of my tongue. So that's fun, but it's also been fun just to kind of, you know, I love a little bit of philosophy and whatnot here and there. So like ones that I saw that you had seen and I just saw for the first time, like understanding why you love this. Because as an adult, if I had just seen this like on a whim by myself, I'd have been like, no way, this is dumb. Like, why am I even watching? I would not have finished it, honestly. But then understanding like how someone else can see this movie differently and feel differently about the story.
Right.
Because you have this nostalgic attachment to it, or maybe even something a little deeper than that. I think we talked a little bit about, you know, the movie House. Like, I would have had zero connection to that. But I know, you know, you have a parent who survived Vietnam and has lived through some trauma of that and whatnot. And even though it's a silly movie, like, there's still storytelling happening there.
Something deep going on.
Yeah, exactly. And you watch that with your cousins who are from that side of the family growing up, you know, when you were still living near your family in West Virginia. You know, so it's just, there was a connection level that I never would have had. Like any other, we probably would have never had that discussion. And I never would have thought about that movie in that way.
Yeah.
Without this.
Right.
You know, so I appreciate that. I think that's valuable.
Yeah, I would say, you know, you get kind of a risk if you and I haven't seen the movie. And so that's how we ended up with Sphere. In a way, I kind of felt bad because, like, if you watch Sphere in order to listen to our podcast, I'm kind of like, well, that's kind of sad that we wasted 2 hours of your life.
You didn't have to watch it. You could have just waited for us to tell you if it was good or bad.
That's true. But we did say spoilers, you know. So
yeah, that's true. That's true. We do spoilers.
But then Twice Told Tales is another one. You and I had never seen it.
That's true.
And it just happened to be on Amazon Prime. We thought, well, out of 20, you know, like, you got to do a Vincent Price film.
Right.
And so we found that one and picked that one. And I thought it was pretty good. Like, we enjoyed going through that together.
Well, yeah. And we both have a connection to Vincent Price just because he was available in our childhood. Like, his voice, I mean, if you've ever just listened to Michael Jackson and you know the song Thriller, you're going to know Vincent Price's voice, you know?
Yeah.
Even if you never grew up watching any of his other stuff.
Right.
So, yeah. So, there was that.
And I'd never seen Monster Squad, so that was a little different for me. You'd seen that one and knew that one real well. And then I think there were a couple, three movies that I discovered through COVID where we're just watching random movies. So Black Sunday fell in that category. And that was kind of a cool episode we did with Ashton.
Yeah.
You know, because she had never seen it either. You had never seen it. You both watched it just basically for me.
Yeah.
To do the podcast.
Because you told us to.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And that was like really cool gothic, you know, classic that we never even knew
existed.
That
was really the education part of it for me. Like, I didn't know this movie. I'd never heard of it. And I had no idea, like, how much influence it had had on the genre moving forward, you know? So that kind of stuff, just, I love to nerd out on, even though it's not my niche, you know, this is not British lit. This is not biology.
Yeah.
I just like stuff. I like to know stuff. So, so no, it was good.
Oh, that's awesome. So for season two, actually, I have enough films picked for season two and season three. And these are just ideas or suggestions. You know how I do movies. Like, you and I, we basically think of what's available to us.
Right, yeah.
We like to think about, like, what's available. Now, it's kind of annoying, I'm sure, if you're trying to, like, go through our episodes, you know, several weeks later. You're like, oh, I can't find this movie on Amazon anymore. Or, like, it's not on Tubi TV like these guys said it was.
Yeah, that stuff does tend to be pretty mobile. I don't know.
Yeah.
We were frustrated with that even today. Our daughter has been dying to watch The King and I, like the old Yul Brynner, you know. And I think she eventually had to rent it. In fact, I think there's cash laying around the house somewhere. She's like, here, I'm just paying for it. Here's my money.
Well, you know, we didn't talk about this earlier, but we've been on a disaster film kick lately.
That's true. You and the kids have been watching through the old disaster films.
So we did The Poseidon Adventure. We did Twister. We did Towering Inferno. And I saw Tubi TV had Earthquake for free for about a month. And I was like, all right, guys, get it together. We're going to watch Earthquake now. And guess what?
It was gone. I don't think I've seen all the others, but I don't think I've seen Earthquake.
It's a Charlton Heston movie.
Really?
Yeah.
I usually dip out when you guys watch. I like Twister. I don't know, because it's nostalgic from my younger years or whatever. But disaster movies stress me out.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yeah, you guys have fun with that. I'm going to go read my book.
Yeah. I like it. It's kind of like a what would you do scenario.
It is. It very much is. Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, I do like, I don't love the movie, but is it called Avalanche? Is that the mm-hmm. name? Yeah, Mystery Avalanche. Science Theater covers that disaster movie. It's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
They're up at like terrible, some though. Ski lodge in the mountains. Yeah, yeah, the movie's terrible, but
it's great with a you know, some robots making jokes.
Yeah, exactly. If you can have Mystery Science Theater cracking jokes on it, that's fantastic.
Anyway, so yeah, be looking out on Instagram for when season two is going to start up. We really enjoyed season one. Thank you for sticking with us this
whole time.
Thanks,
guys. Yes.
We really enjoyed it.
Keep us up to date on what's happening. What are you watching through the summer? You might pick something that we haven't seen and we need to watch.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. All right. Well, have a good one.
Enjoy your summer, guys. Enjoy your movies. And peace out.
Peace out.